Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Beltway Blitz coming up in just a couple here on Grant and Danny. Sponsored by the law firm Condori and Murrah. Those guys are fired up. Got a text from Wasim right as the final second ticked off the clock last night and the Caps advanced. We went with them to a game last year. They're huge fans. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their teams today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. The Capitals advanced. They took out the Canadiens in five games. Did a nice detailed breakdown of last night's win in the series off the top of the show. If you missed that, TheFanDC.com. All of our Caps playoff coverage comes to you via Astrom Carpentry. For 25 years, they have been a trusted trade partner for new home builders in the DMV. Astrom, specializing full-service interior trim carpentry, handling everything from supply to installation, turnkey and hassle-free. Contact Astrom.com today. That's Astrom, the home builder's trade partner. Let's get you a Beltway Blitz. And to discuss the Capitals, we are joined by Katie Florio of the Capitals Radio Network. Five games, a seamless 4-1 series win, a fairly seamless 4-1 game last night. This is not what we're used to around these parts, Katie. That seemed fairly easy.
Yeah, well, I'd like to think my first year covering the Capitals that I came in as the good luck charm, but no, I think it was a testament to kind of what we've seen all season. And I think the Capitals, they certainly didn't go into this series overlooking Montreal. I know I did not at any point think of this as, you know, the top seed in the Eastern Conference versus the second wild card. There was times when Montreal did show, I mean, they have a very young, solid, skilled forward core. And I think that they will be a successful team in the years to come. But like you mentioned, in these five games, I think the Capitals were just the better team. Obviously, that game three, kind of a fluke. You had a little bit of everything. I think there were 17 giveaways by the Capitals in that game. So obviously, if you're going to do that, that's going to bite you. And then Logan Thompson in and out. And luckily, he's obviously doing just fine now. But overall, it was a good physical series, that's for sure. A lot of fireworks that got the fans fired up, especially in Montreal. And now it's on to a tough Carolina team.
Katie, how important was it to dispatch Montreal quickly? Just given, A, the Carolina's looming, but just B, the history and everything else. How important was it for these guys to get it done as soon as possible?
Oh, absolutely. Like you mentioned, you obviously look at your next opponent who had gotten their business taken care of the night before. And so the last thing you want is, well, the guys that you're potentially going to play next are at home resting up. You're in this battle. And like I said, it obviously playoff hockey is always going to be a battle, but these were some physical games. They have some physical guys, Arber Jacki and Josh Anderson. And so these games can take a toll on you physically. And so it was very, very important for the Capitals and any team to try to take care of business quickly. Now they have a few days to rest up, to prepare, whether it's video, on the ice practice, whatever it may be. But obviously really good to get the job done in five.
Katie Florio, the Capitals Radio Network. Alexi Protas played for the first time in the series last night. I love getting him out there to just get him some minutes, get up to speed before the Carolina series. But what did you see from him?
Yeah, I think he looked great. Obviously, he's been practicing with the team now for quite a while, and I know we were, all of us who were in Montreal, we would see him taking part in the full morning skate, thinking, oh, is this the day? Is this the day? So glad that it finally happened last night. And I thought he looked really good. I think as far as, you know, I think the first thing with the injury and what it was is you're going to look at his skating and is he kind of favoring one leg over the other? And I thought he looked totally fine. I know walking around the practice rink, he looks fine back to himself. But I think first and foremost, that's just now you're getting size and strength back into your lineup. And then obviously another guy that's great on the PK, you lose Martin Ferravari for injury, unfortunately. And so it was hard losing two of them. And I think he fit in nicely once again. I think his scoring opportunities and chances will come down the stretch with Carolina. But I think for a first game back since April 4th, we definitely saw the produce that we all are used to and like seeing.
Katie, where does he end up in terms of the lines right now? It's almost like everything's going so well, you don't want to disrupt it. But at the same time, he's really good. He's a full 200-foot player. What do you do?
Yeah, no, that's a good question because obviously the initial thought was to throw him right back on that top line. But the way Anthony Beauvillier is playing and the way he's meshing with his line mates on that top line, it's almost that, you know, that phrase, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so I think it was the smart decision to start him back on that fourth line yesterday to start the game with Duhame in doubt. And like you said, get the minutes and kind of see where it goes. But it's a good problem to have because it would be a lot worse if who you had to replace Protus with was not doing anything. But the fact that Beauvillier has gone up there and produced has obviously been huge for this team, and getting Pro back in just bolsters his lineup even more.
You mentioned the Hurricanes, but I just wanted to get a little deeper into the series. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves because we don't even have a schedule, but what are your thoughts on that matchup? I think Carolina got points in three of the four games this year. They are the favorites in the series. Drill down a little more on what kind of problems they present and what the Caps would have to do to win the series.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a hard, physical, but exciting matchup. I think these two teams, I know, you know, it's two of the best. And I just saw a stat today. I believe Logan Thompson and Freddie Anderson are, I think, save percentage, the two highest in playoffs so far. Obviously, Anderson gets hurt in the first series, and I hear he's day-to-day, so we'll most likely be back by round two. But yeah, you have we all saw the fireworks in Carolina at the beginning of April, and obviously in a playoff game, I don't think you're going to get as much as that, but they're a gritty team. They have a lot of guys that can score, Aho, Svechnikov, and they're a skilled team as well. And you pair that with the strength and the physicality that they have and the goaltending, it's going to be a hard matchup. But you know what? The Capitals have the same thing. They have really strong goaltending right now. We saw depth. I think that's something Brandon Duhame to get three goals. Granted, two of them were obviously empty netters in this series, but to come up big when he did and score that game tying goal in game four, and Andrew Mangiapane as well. I think this was a series where the Capitals were not just relying on the top six. We really saw that depth breakthrough, Anthony Beauvillier as well. And that's something that is definitely going to have to continue if the Capitals want to get out of round two. It's not going to be an easy task by any means, but I think that this is a team that is capable of doing that.
Katie, thank you as always. Glad to be talking more hockey because the Caps won. Talk soon.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the Nationals. Why, Grant and I will do that here. The Nats getting sunned a little bit up there in Philadelphia, GP. Going up against one of the best teams in baseball, World Series aspirations. They had your two best going on the mound. Lost two games.
Yeah, and the tough thing was going into this series, they were only two games behind Philadelphia, believe it or not. They were 13-15. The Phillies were 15-13 on the season, and it hasn't been as lopsided as it looks to have lost both of these games, but they came back and they lost their most demoralizing game that they have not won this season in game one of this series. They got a 3-run home run from Nathaniel Lowe. Think about this, guys. They're on their final pitch with two outs, two strikes. They're down two runs, and Lowe hits a 3-run homer. That should be a win of the year candidate, Danny. That's the kind of game we're talking about in September. Hey, remember back in late April when they won that game against Philadelphia? And then they blew it. In that game, they had their closer with a one-run lead. Finnegan come on. He has to slam the door. He couldn't do it. They lose the game. So now you've lost a game, essentially, that you should have won. You go into game two of the series after Gore, your number one, pitched in an L. And now you've got Jake Irvin, your number two. And just like in the first game of the series when Kyle Schwarber hit a two-run first-inning home run, all this guy does is torment the Nats. The former National, I think he homers against them in every game he plays against
feels like,
them.
It feels like Murphy against the Mets.
It's preposterous. Yeah. So he hits a three-run home run. They're down 3-0. Jake Irvin ends up giving up six earnings. ERA goes over 4 for the season. He had been just stupendous in his last few starts, but he had a really rough first couple outings. Now this one, so his ERA balloons to over 4. And I don't know if you're worried, but Jake Irvin's velocity is down 2 miles an hour this season.
That's what I was going to bring up. Stuff didn't look as sharp yesterday, and overall this year hadn't thrown as hard. Now, it's not all about velocity with him, obviously, because his breaking ball is so good, and you know we've lost context, or lost – that's not the right word. It's now anybody that's not throwing 100, we go, how's this guy ever going to get out? Well, there was generations of pitchers who would locate and change speeds and rely on movement and, you know, throwing precise strikes and the like. But that's kind of unusual now. So you could still do pretty well with that, as he has, you know, over the last couple of seasons. But velo down that big. I mean, last night he was throwing 88, 89, kind of the later part of his start. Doesn't look quite right. I mean, they're saying it's mechanics, but my alarm bells go off when there's that big of a dip.
Average fastball velocity last year, 94. This year, 92. That's pretty revealing. But hopefully, as the weather warms up and we get deeper into this thing, his arm continues to charge up, so to speak. When they don't hit home runs, they don't score runs.
Yeah.
That's another little bit of an issue with this team. They made a big emphasis this offseason about driving the ball more, and they did bring in a little more power. Lowe's giving them some pop. Josh Bell's been mostly ineffective and not helpful, but he has hit a few home runs this year. James Wood, obviously, is on pace for 40 home runs. But yesterday, they were kept in the ball yard. They only managed 5 hits and 2 runs. So when they don't hit the ball over the fence, typically they only score a couple of runs, and it's just not enough. But Brad Lord is going today in the finale. They need a good 5 or so innings out of him. That's generally about what he gives you on the high end. Means a lot of innings for the bullpen against the Phillies lineup, which is not ideal. But you got to kind of steal one that doesn't look good on paper here. Maybe get to the Phillies pitching staff, try to get into their bullpen after, you know, their deep rotation, but you worked your way through the front part of the rotation in this series. You're going to have to score 6 or 7 maybe to win this thing.
I think that is probably the plan. Bats better wake up. Let's talk about the local football team, please. About Mitch Tischler, who talks about the football team all the darn time. That's why he's doing it here on the Beltway Blitz. Mitch, do we agree that they still need to go shopping for a defensive end, and the guy that's going to get the most sacks on the team may not be on the roster yet?
It's certainly possible. I mean, yes, they definitely need help getting after the quarterback, but I think that we saw what happened when you have a guy who goes out and gets double-digit sacks but isn't able to set an edge against the run, what can happen to a defense. And while the guys that they have right now are looking like you're starting defensive ends, edge rusher type guys, are the most exciting as when it comes to rushing the passer. You're hoping that, you know, front four of the table to contain the run is going to be able to help out this defense a lot.
Mitch, what other areas, and if you were going to rank them right now, like where on paper do you not love the way they're constructed, where maybe they could use a little more help?
Corner. I mean, I've been saying it for a while.
Even after taking Amos, you're still worried?
There's a lot of hope that Marshawn Lattimore is going to be good again. And, you know, he was at times last year when he came over to Washington, but there are also times that he was very bad. What happens if Lattimore is the very bad version of himself and you're sitting there and Amos and Mikey Sainer still, I guess, are your two outside corners? Who's your slot corner? Who are your guys? There's very, very little depth there, and I feel like there's a lot of hope that Trey Amos is going to step in and be able to help right away, which ultimately I think will be the case, but that Marshawn Lattimore is going to magically return to the player, you know, that we saw be an all-pro type guy or Pro Bowl type guy when he was in New Orleans.
What role is Jaylen White going to have in this offense, maybe at the start of the year and then down the line?
You know, I don't know exactly how he's going to fit into this offense a ton. I like the player. I just don't love the fit necessarily, unless they really think Deebo Samuel is kind of a one-year player for this team, and then Jalen Lane's going to be able to step in and kind of take over that role. But they seem to be semi-similar in that they both he and Deebo like to get the ball around the line of scrimmage and then maybe use that speed to get downfield. He's not exactly a take-the-top-off-the-defense type guy. Granted, he played at Virginia Tech. There wasn't a lot in that offense, so maybe ultimately that's what this coaching staff sees him to be. But to me, I think he's a guy that's got to threaten defenses downfield. I think you've got to try and, you know, use that speed, use that elusiveness to open up things underneath for Deebo and also not allow teams to just double Terry the way they've seen him do the past few seasons.
Mitch, I appreciate you speaking Danny. You understood my translation there. I don't know who the hell Jalen White is. You clearly said Jalen Lane. So
did
thank you.
Did I get the right one?
Yeah. So I don't know if I was thinking about Jaleel White from Full Family Matters. I have no idea what that was.
Family Matters.
But you speak Danny, and that's always important. So thank you, buddy.
Of course. I wasn't gonna leave you hanging there.
What have you made of the Nick Chubb rumors?
I think the rumors come from a team that needs running back help. And, you know, I think I've talked about it here before, but certainly on our Beltway Football podcast and others, I think you can get a really good running back. If you don't get one of the top tier guys in the draft, one of the top two or three guys, you can pick up you can find running backs that can help you out from all over the place and in a lot of different ways. And certainly drafting the Ja'Cory Merritt kid in the seventh round is interesting and I think helps, but ultimately I think you need a lot of competition in there at running back. And you know, we've seen what Nick Chubb can do, particularly between the tackles, and you know, granted we haven't seen a lot of it the past season and a half, 2 seasons, but I'd be willing to kick the tires and see what comes on the other side.
By the way, Ja'Cory Merritt's nickname is Bill, which I just think is really funny. I'm like, Bill, short for Ja'Cory.
It's like a lot of syllables and a hyphen name. It's just Bill.
People call him Bill. I think that's funny. I don't know why.
I like it. I have a nickname for folks that I don't necessarily know at work. I'll just call them Walt. And that's just my default. If I'm not exactly sure your name is, you're either Walt or Waltess.
I'll take that. It's better than Hoss or Big Guy. Mitch, NFL.com had Washington sixth on their power rankings, ahead of Tampa, ahead of Minnesota, who had a 14-win season last year, Green Bay, a couple other teams. Does that feel about right to you? A little too high, maybe a little low? Where are you at?
I think it probably feels about right. I mean, I don't know that there's any team, particularly in the NFC, that you can say is definitely better than the Commanders. You know, I think last year you could have obviously said the Eagles. I think they lost a lot of guys on that defense, and I think there's going to be a lot of questions there. But so maybe the Eagles are definitively better, but not by a whole lot. After that, I think the Commanders are right up there, and they can play with and beat anybody, and they're going to have a lot of opportunities next year with a pretty tough schedule. But I think you're going to see a team that is, you know, the best defense is a good offense. And the additions they made along the offensive line there, combined with what they can do, you know, in the backfield with Jaden and, you know, all the different things that we like to see out of Cliff Kingsbury, this offense could be the best offense in the NFL next season. It's certainly going to be, you know, top couple, and I'm excited to see it.
Mitch, we appreciate you, buddy. Be good. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
You got it. Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports, with us on Grant and Danny talking about the Commanders. We have not asked one of the most basic questions that should probably be asked to our listeners about the stadium this week since the news broke. Do you think it happens? I want to pose that question to people next at 800-636-1067. The Virginia thing didn't, right? I think this is different, and I'll explain why next. But do you guys think this actually happens? You've heard three different congresspeople already come on our show in the last couple of days to discuss this. And also, do you have any major issues with the plan? Is there anything to you that you'd consider a real, maybe it's not a deal breaker, but something you don't like at all about the plan? Phones are open, 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. What a week in D.C. sports. The Capitals have moved on. They'll take on the Carolina Hurricanes in round two. The Commanders polished off their draft class over the weekend and helped themselves. The Nationals had a nice homestand. Took 2 out of 3 from the Mets to start a 4-game set. Took 2 out of 3 from the Baltimore Orioles. It hasn't quite been as fun as they've hit the road now to get to Philadelphia. But maybe the biggest story, the future of the RFK site and the deal that was struck with the press conference on Monday, Mayor Muriel Bowser with owner Josh Harris saying that RFK 2 is happening, that it's going to be what the city needs and what the team needs to push forward and to have the future that we all want, both in D.C. and for the Commanders. The question we've got for you guys is, and we haven't asked the most simple question yet, do you think they cross the finish line here? Is this going to go down? This press conference, like years and years ago, I would have thought, you have this press conference, it's over. And someone would have said, yeah, but way back when, Jack Kent Cook sat at National Landing in Potomac Yards, and, you know, he almost, you know, had crossed the goal line at that point, and then it didn't happen. I'd say, yeah, but that was years ago. It wouldn't happen now. I just lived the Virginia thing. So it doesn't mean that it will. Do you think that this eventually is a winner and that they get the 7 votes from the D.C. Council with this proposal that they need, 800-636-1067? I was at the Caps game last night, and I was talking with someone, and they kept bringing up, oh, Virginia happened, I'm nervous. I don't think Virginia and this are very similar, to be honest. I don't know how comparable they are, other than that it's a team trying to move a stadium. Here's what I mean by this. Virginia was Ted Leonsis wanting to go across the river for what he perceived to be was a better deal than the deal he could not get from D.C., number one. He ended up getting the deal he wanted in D.C. Still, I would imagine, from a business standpoint, he would prefer the Virginia deal over the one he got in D.C. But they didn't have to move. They wanted to move. There is a big, big difference. Capital One Arena is still a tremendous home. They're refurbishing it for closer to $1 billion than, you know, a $500,000 at this point. And by doing that, they're going to have a state-of-the-art, better version of the facility that they have. But you can also make the case that you always wanted to be in D.C. if you could have your druthers anyway, if you're Ted Leonsis. The location in Virginia, on the water there, is not better than being downtown at 7th and F Streets. You couldn't get the deal you wanted, so you were going to go to Virginia to get a better deal, a real estate deal. You could put your finger in a lot of the pies with a lot of the restaurants and bars and all that stuff. And as an owner, it would have been really, really good because the money now is in the real estate deals, so to speak. But that was a want, not a need. The Commanders don't want to be in Maryland. The location they're in currently, unlike Capital One Arena, is not a good location. Even as a guy who's okay with them building another stadium there if it has to happen that way, if I get a great stadium, I acknowledge it's a terrible location. For them, there is a desperation to get into the city. That's where they feel like they are best, where they have the best business opportunity, where the aerial shots on Monday Night Football of the mall are going to help them. Ted's already in D.C. talking about leaving and getting outside of the city. So I think it's very, very different, whereas that was a, I can't get what I want from D.C., so I'm going to go to Virginia, leave a pretty good situation and get a better one. This is leaving a really bad situation in terms of the Landover area and going to a very, very good situation, and there's more desperation here. So I just don't think that they're overly comparable.
So let me tell you why it is comparable, because everything you said is correct, but let me do this. What am I talking about? The most senior high elected official in a given place negotiates a deal. The deal is completed. Then it goes to a lesser voting body who can potentially get in the way. Which one am I talking about? That's why it's the same.
The politics are similar, but I also think, again, the politics of the Virginia deal. Virginia's never had a stadium because largely Virginia's never wanted one. Like there's never really been an aggression to get one, whereas that's not the case for the city. We just saw them move mountains and find money they supposedly didn't have to keep the Caps and the Wizards there because, and I hate to say it this way, but I kind of feel this way. I think that the team, certainly the building at Cap One Arena, is holding neighborhoods up. I mean, it's holding the city afloat in a lot of ways from a business standpoint right now.
Oh, sure. I guess, but there are plenty of folks on the council that never want one, have already released statements. But I guess, my point is I understand a person going, there's a lot of Virginia here. There are differences. You've pointed them out, and you're right about that. I guess from a macro view, I would go, yeah, I get it. Where we had a celebration, we had an announcement, we had a press conference, and then members of a council, one posted memes, and that was their response. But then the local D.C. council going, not so fast, my friend. The answer is going to be no. So I understand the reticence, I guess, is my only point.
I understand the nerves because you just dealt with this. I'm just saying I think that when you – they're both cars, right? It's politics. You need votes. There are people that could be a pain in the ass. But when you lift up the hood, I think the engines are very, very different. Of the Virginia situation where you're going from a good situation that a lot of people would tell you is actually the preferred idyllic situation, which is the D.C. team being in D.C. and leaving D.C. versus this, which is Nobody thinks that's a good location. It's a terrible location where they are now. It's really the only other option they have. It's a way worse location than the one that they are desperate for. Ted Leonsis, by the way, before Virginia, tried to do the thing that D.C. eventually did. We had Brooke Pinto on the show. She's the councilwoman, or the council member, I guess, to be correct, in that Ward 2 there where the arena is. And she said they screwed up. She said, we almost blew it. I forget her exact quote.
Yeah, but it was along those lines.
But she acknowledged, like, we learned our lesson, she kept saying over and over again. He kept saying, here's what I need, here's what I need, here's what I need. Help me help you, help me help you. And they go, nah. And he goes, okay, fine. He didn't just, it wasn't like from day one, he's like, we got to be in Virginia. From day one, Josh Harris hasn't said it publicly. Him and his people are trying to figure out how they can get into D.C. And I just think that's different because there's an urgency. There's a, I overuse desperation, but there's an aggression. They feel like the ceiling of a Maryland location versus a D.C. location is night and day. I don't think Ted felt that way about Capital One Arena refurbished versus Virginia.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment.
It was just good or better. 800-636-1067. Also, and you mentioned this is a good point, Louise Lucas is not in D.C., so she can't single-handedly hold this thing up and post a bunch of memes.
Yeah.
We got that going for us, too.
I haven't seen any memes to, like, let people know which way people stand or whatever.
That's a good point.
Right. We've been meme-free for a little while.
I should have asked Charles Allen about that. I was told that when you didn't want a stadium, you're supposed to post memes of yourself in a graveyard over top of, like, a picture of Josh Harris or something.
Yeah. What you want to be is the lowest level internet commenter. That's the standard. Anyway,
somebody asked me yesterday, what's the chance that this thing happens? I'm making this up because I don't know, and you know, how do you even begin that? I say 80%. I mean, I think it's very, very likely. I guess I won't say slam dunk. I also wonder if there's going to be more negotiation. The team would tell you this is the deal. Like, they don't really want to negotiate the deal. The city would say, in some cases, Allen, maybe Mendelsohn, whoever, we have to negotiate. So maybe it changes a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's some tweaking possible. So if it's end game, stadium or no stadium, I think it ends up happening. Now, do I think that it's as it's written right now this second? Maybe, maybe not. I think that's the complicated part, right? Where I think a couple members of the council could be swayed by one concession or one extra stipulation or one thing being removed or one kind of data point, and they would go, this is my holdup. I'm just making this up. So Charles Allen, for example, could go, 8,000 parking spots is too many. They go, what about 6,000? He could go, okay. Now, I'm not saying you would, but you know what I mean? But that still means stadium is happening. To me, I think there's too much opportunity for grandstanding, too much opportunity for let me get my voice out there, let me go do every bit of media and swashbuckle and show you that I'm a hero for my ward and my residents and my city and my this and my that. At the end of the day, though, there is so much money that's going to change hands. What politicians love more than anything else is that golden shovel in the ground, standing in front of some place with a big old pair of novelty scissors to cut that ribbon. It's the thing. It's what you're known for. It's your your legacy piece or whatever. So, you know, I think you're going to see a lot of the puffing of chest and tell me how fiscally important it is. You got to watch out for every dollar from the taxpayer. And that sounds great in theory. If there was follow through over the years, I might be more inclined to believe you, quite frankly.
Let's go to Neil in Arlington. Neil, do you think it happens? Do you have any major issues with the plan as it's drawn up now?
Hey, yeah, so I do think it happens. And I think, the points you brought up about the differences between this and Virginia are significant. I think, like, the key difference there was, the governor in Virginia having kind of an open antagonism to his legislature. And then I think, the perception of an open antagonism to the area in which, Northern Virginia, that they sort of just don't seem to get along so well. I think as it relates to the stadium, sure, there's probably going to be some horse trading and, trying to get some concessions out of for specific wards and constituencies. But the fact that the team has been so willing to pay for the stadium and the costs that are associated with the infrastructure around the area are going to be footed by the bill of the taxpayers, like, that seems more workable to me than what you see with a lot of these publicly funded stadium deals where the taxpayer has the burden for the entirety of the whole thing,
Yeah, I mean, the way that the deals are typically being structured now, cities have to pay more up front. But the point that, you know, Allen and Mendelsohn both said, that sounds well and good, but there's still a huge upfront cost from D.C. You either understand that that's money well spent. I understand the wrong word. You either feel that's money well spent, or you're going, nope, that's too big, and we may or may not make it back. Reasonable minds can disagree on that, I think. But you're right, in terms of the balance of the deal right now, it's still a huge percentage outlined for the team and that ownership group.
Yeah, and I just, when I look at the deal, the money the city's paying is almost all not going to the actual stadium. You know, the actual right. stadium cost is being footed by the team.
Mm-hmm.
They've got plenty of skin in the game. The money, the you know, $1 billion the city's spending is building up that area around it. First of all, cleaning up and then building horizontally, you know, around the stadium. But the Virginia deal, I guess at its core, what is different? The Virginia deal was based on Leontis not getting what he wanted needed from D.C. and saying, okay, well, this doesn't work, so I'm going to Virginia. That's how it started, was basically animus toward the city.
Yeah.
This is an owner going, where's the one idyllic great location I'd like to be most? D.C.
Yeah, this isn't a Maryland problem where they weren't living up to their end of the bargain or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just think it's very, very different from the start. Is this thing going to happen, yes or no? And do you have any major issues with the plans that you've seen? That's the question on Grant and Danny.
The last several years, what I have heard is, when I've spoken to communities about this all across the city, I've said, what if we could build a stadium, but also build housing and retail and hotels and green space? And you know what so many people said to me? That would be ideal, but that's not possible. They'll never make that happen. It's happening. It's all in the term sheet. This is what people have been calling for. And so this idea that we're going to, you know, turn our back on the opportunity for the largest economic development opportunity in our history is short-sighted, and I don't think is where we should be headed.
That is Council Member Brooke Pinto, who was on the show yesterday. We have had three council members on to this point. Phil Mendelsohn, who's the chair, who I'm filing into the maybe pile, but I would say he's a no for the moment. He just said he hasn't slammed the gavel yet. He wants to work on the proposal. But it seemed to me like his biggest frustration was just that he was uninvolved by the mayor.
Yeah, he has a longstanding, again, I'm not trying to trivialize these things, a longstanding beef or disagreement, whatever, with the mayor. They're professional, I'm sure. But so I think that was his gripe, is that we weren't included in this. We're just seeing this now, and she has a budget that's been due that's this many weeks overdue, and we're sort of like, that sounds great. What about the stadium part? Like, we're the sports show here, right? You could do a, somebody's podcast about local politics, and I can't wait to hear it. It'll be riveting. I'll make sure to download it immediately. But what about that part?
But he was kind of joining us. Charles Allen was fantastic. He's a no. I disagree with him, but I thought he was a great guest. And yeah. Brooke Pinto's a yes. She was also a really, really good guest, and she was kind enough to actually come to Capital One Arena, which is in her ward, yesterday to join us on site before the Caps game. So that was pretty cool. But right now there's four yeses on the record. One of those yeses is from McDuffie, who's hopefully going to be on the show with us tomorrow. So that'll make four of the 12 that we've already had on, which is instructive. But four yeses, two nos, and six maybes is kind of where we're at. Do you think that this happens? They need seven yeses. Mendelsohn made it clear he doesn't think there's some support for this. Allen said he didn't know. He just hasn't heard from enough people to know if there's support. And then Pinto seemed to think that there was plenty of support. She disagrees with the idea that there wouldn't be seven votes right now. Nick in Sterling, what's up?
Good day, gentlemen. Love the show. Always appreciate you guys. Love the topic.
Thanks, bud.
I think I'm like a 60-70% chance that this goes through. I think the hurdles have more to do with the city. Don't forget they're still trying to chase down $1 billion in federal funding, and their bond rating just went down, so the cost of borrowing goes up. So all of those things are the things council people have to deal with. But Josh Harris and the ownership team brought a hell of a deal to the table. I think it's a good thing for the city. The question is, can the city pull together to make that happen?
It's well said.
Thanks, bud.
I haven't mentioned this yet, but another reason I'm confident, I trust this ownership group. They do things well. They're smart. People want to work with them. They get deals done. They have. They've reached across any of the various boundaries to this point to do things faster and more effectively than we thought they were going to. That's the football operation. That's the business operation. So I trust them, and I think in a way that nobody wanted to work with Dan Snyder, people want to work with this group. They are successful. So that's number one. The other thing is, he said it's a good deal. The deal's really good. Like, I think that is irrefutable. That's the part where Charles Allen says it's a bad deal. He doesn't like the parking or some element of it. I don't expect you to like every part of it. But what I do need you to acknowledge, whether you're Charles Allen or anybody that doesn't like the deal, is what has been the norm in the NFL for a long, long time is that somewhere between 50% and 70% of the money is publicly funded for these stadiums. And this ownership group is saying, we'll handle 76% of it. You handle 24% of it. Now, Mendelsohn says, who cares about the percentages? It's over $1 billion. That's more than any public amount for an NFL stadium to this point, and that's what he cares about. That's fine. The percentage is the deal. That's how a deal works. How much are you compromising? Right. How much am I compromising? And there isn't a precedent in these recent deals for an ownership group, short of the couple of examples where an owner has just paid for the entire thing, which I don't think is an option here. We have not seen the three-quarters split private to public. There's also that you got to spend $200 million to clean up the land and do something with it anyway, no matter what you're going to do, which gets deducted from the $1.1 billion. There's also that this money isn't going directly to the stadium, oh, by the way. And then it still comes back to, and I'm all ears for any listener to answer this for me or any council person that wants to, what are you putting there that will generate more tax revenue and more jobs, and be more of a positive influence on the city than the stadium and everything that's going to come along with it? When I hear that answer, I'm open to changing my mind. I haven't yet. I think there's a better chance that blight sits vacant for years on and years and years. Oh, by the way, they wouldn't have the land without the football team. They could not get the land without the team getting them the land via Hail Mary. Minor factor that matters to me.
So I thought one of the best points that Councilmember Pinto made with us yesterday was that the idyllic version of this is what could happen, this is what could happen, this is what we maybe could do. All those things sound great. They do. They sound awesome. Like this perfect utopia that you can build with this 180 acres of all the different things that people want, with the merry-go-rounds and everyone holding hands singing Kumbaya and a rainbow shooter and everything's perfect. Where's that plan? If somebody has that plan, let's compare the plans. But they don't have that.
No.
Now, if you want to.
In fairness, they've only had 30 years to have the plan. Let's go to Mo in Largo. Hey, Mo, how are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
People, this is a deep cut. They have the concepts of a plan.
The concepts of a plan.
Do you remember that one? That was fun. Mo, what's up?
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I mean, I'm kind of on both sides of this. Ultimately, yes, I would like to see our team have a new stadium. But given that what it will cost people, I just don't think it's a good deal. I mean, personally, I'll go to a couple games, but is it worth the tax that it's going to put on the people that really won't go to the games, that really can't afford the adjustment? That aren't for it.
But those people benefit from stores that they can't go to right now and restaurants that they don't have right now and all of the things around it and an $89 million athletic facility that the cheerleaders that have to leave D.C. or the athletes that don't.
You're assuming that these people want these things. You're assuming that.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
I've talked to a couple of people from that area who have told me they do want them, but I guess that's true. I haven't talked to all of them.
A couple of people.
So you don't think that families there want an $89 million sports facility for their young athletes to participate in so they don't have to drive 30 minutes to do that? You don't think they want stores that they don't have or restaurants that aren't available to them?
It depends on how much it's going to cost them. Because from what I understand, and I have a pretty good circle of friends that live in the city that are pretty well off and educated about these types of scenarios, and from what I understand, they're going to take a significant tax increase all across the city. Not to mention all the programs and so forth that are going to be cut because they need these resources to push this deal through. So I just feel like so many more people will be hurt by this than helped That's just my personal feeling.
But they're going to if they're turning that into the Worf 2, and I mean 2.0, not as well, but I guess both work, then they're still getting taxed more. Those things all still go up. They're still paying for the city, which would now be spending $1 billion still to do all of that. And you're not getting a Super Bowl, which generates revenue that nothing at the Worf 2.0 would. You're not getting the Final Four. You're not getting the WrestleMania. You're not getting the NFL draft and all of those things that could come that generate unbelievable good. You're not getting the 2,000 jobs that a stadium would provide. So I'm not saying it's a slam dunk necessarily. I'm just comparing it to another option. The other, unless you're saying just let it sit vacant and not have to pay a penny, if that's the better idea, sure, okay, fine. I don't happen to think that that's better.
Right. So, Mo, I understand your point. And there is a burden that's going to be placed on somebody, right? And the somebody's not the council members or whoever's voting for this. You're right. There'll be taxes. The same way to pay for Nats Park, my friends who run businesses in D.C., they pay a stadium tax that comes right out of their bottom line for something they may or may not use. They may or may not have the benefit of. They may or may not ever go down to the Navy Yard. So that I totally understand what you're saying. But Grant's point, and I don't want to speak for you, I think is the most important one here. Let's say there's no stadium, and let's say they just build up as a number of the neighborhoods have.
Another NoMa neighborhood or another Worf.
Exactly. The new taxes are coming. Like the cost of everything is coming. DC is whether it's losing revenue from people not going back to work, whether it's losing revenue from layoffs, whether it's losing revenue for people leaving the city, whatever, they need to make up ground somehow. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and I don't love that, but there is a trade-off. If you would like a new thing, it's going to have to be paid for. And you're right. There are people that probably won't get much out of it, won't really use it, that are going to have to pay for it. And that's the cost of doing business.
But I'd love to double-click on, and we could do this next, this idea. And if anybody's from that ward over there and listening, I want to hear from you. You can move to the front of the line at 800-636-1067. But the idea that, the folks over there that don't have some of these things right now wouldn't want them, you're saying, I'm assuming, and you're right, I'm basing it on a few conversations. There are tens of thousands of people over there. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine they would. I didn't grow up in a community in King George where we had a $90 million sports facility where we could go train and do things. But a lot of people, like you, Danny, probably in Northern Virginia or D.C., got to be in facilities like that. I think that the people in that neighborhood deserve that, too, that those cheerleaders would benefit from that, too. But maybe they wouldn't want it. Grant and Danny on the Fan.